Good afternoon, brethren. It's another fantastic day here to be. We'll see so many. If you've, which I know you have, you've paid attention to the news. I was talking before services. We're dealing with things now that 10 years ago I never thought I'd be dealing with. You know, I thought we was going to be dealing with persecution and, you know, families dividing. But we've got things now that I never really knew what they are expected to happen. What about we're dealing with pronouns now. I was never good in English anyway, so now I'm re-educating pronouns at times. Dealing with that. And I think it's July 1 or June 26th, member update. There's an article there under Compass Check about pronouns and a man dealing with them, someone he has to work with. He used to be Mike, and now he's, Eva. And he was just having a little difficulty. How does he address this new person? Well, his conclusion was he just uses the name, whatever this person's going by now. He doesn't say he, she, just addresses them by name. But I just never anticipated dealing with these kinds of issues. And the division, I mean, this has caused some real division, even into hate. You know, even developing into hate for other people. I mean, we're not getting caught up in that, are we? Where actually we become hateful to people that we feel are so out of touch with reality. Let's look at Matthew chapter 24. Today I want to talk about dealing with our enemies. And Is this a time for revenge? Is it a time for mercy? Let's look at Matthew 24, verse 10. And here's a warning from Jesus. Matthew 24, verse 10. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. We haven't got there here, although in some places on the earth that is going on right now. And then verse 10, and I was reading verse 9, and then many will be offended. Yeah, we see that, don't we? People are being offended one against another, even within families, and will betray one another and will hate one another. Verse 11, then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. There's always been false prophets, but here's a prophecy for the future that indicate to me that is going to increase. You know, many. Well, if we won't turn there, but 2 John verse 7, there'll be many deceivers. That was a prediction for the future, even as it was at that time. In 1 John 2:18, many antichrists will come. Well, an antichrist to me would be more than someone lying about Christ, but actually being an antichrist. And in 1 John chapter 4, verse 1, it says to test the spirits. So we're told to be testing. This means that we could be led astray, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. Gone out from where? Many false prophets have gone out. Now back to Matthew 24. I didn't actually turn there. Many false prophets, verse 12, and because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. Because of false prophets, false ideas, division leading to hatred, then the very love could grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. So there'll be false prophets, and they will be representing Jesus. You think an Antichrist, is he going to be coming up and saying, I hate Jesus and you should hate him, he's a fraud? No. He's going to be someone claiming to follow God, but perverting the truth about Jesus, who he was, what he is, where he comes from. If you want to look sometime, Isaiah 9, verse 6, I won't turn there now, gives a description of Jesus and what he will be called. Revelation chapter 1, verse 8, 17, 18, it says here that Jesus has the keys to the grave. And he goes on there in Revelation 2, in verse 23, I am he who searches the heart, and I will give according to the work of each one of you. That's the real Jesus. And these counterfeits claiming to be represent Christ are actually anti-Christ. Oh yeah, they love the Jesus, the sacrifice he gave, and you know, in the manger. But they misrepresent in what Jesus was, who he was, and what he teaches. It says there, because of false prophets, love grows cold. Look at Revelation chapter 2, verse 4 through 5, and we see that Jesus is warning the church. You say, well, that was to that church. Well, these messages are toward all of us. Revelation 2, verse 4 through 5. It says, nevertheless, I have this against you, that you have left your first love. That's what Jesus said. It would grow cold. Love would grow cold. The brethren were to love our neighbor as ourself. And you say, well, who's my neighbor? Well, we'll talk about that a little later, who Jesus said your neighbor is. So in Matthew 19, in verse 16, well, let's do turn there. I was just going to kind of quote that, but Matthew 19, verse 16, here Jesus is asked a question. Behold, one came and said to him, good teacher, what good thing shall I do to have eternal life? What good thing do I need to do? If I do this, you just flip the switch and I got eternal life. It seems like that was the question there. What good thing should I do? And Jesus goes on, why do you call me good? And then Jesus in verse 18, he says, you shall keep the commandments. And the man said, which? And he goes through the last five of the commandments. Honor your father and your mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Well, that sounds like that would be pretty simple. You shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness. And the young man said to him, verse 20, all these things I've kept from my youth, what do I still lack? He said, oh, I keep those commandments. I've known them since I was a child. Let's look at Mark chapter 12. Yeah, we could say, well, I'm keeping the commandments. Mark chapter 12, verse 31. Maybe that was the same one. Yeah, he said, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than them. So the greatest commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself. No greater command. You can say, what? Obeying God's commands does not excuse us so that we don't have to love our neighbor? Does that excuse us to have a vengeful attitude toward, you could say, outsiders? Are these people out there? These people that, they don't know God and they're sinning and doing all kinds of perverse stuff. So does just keeping the Sabbath excuse us from loving our neighbor? Let's look at Matthew chapter 7. I think my point here I want to get to is our neighbor isn't just us sitting here. Our neighbor involves people around us also. Matthew 7, verse 12. I'm in 6. Let's go to chapter 7. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. So how you'd want to be treated, is that just here among us or not? You know, I took offense this week because somebody dared tell my wife she shouldn't be in the park and she could be fined. Oh, man, I had to get on the phone and call somebody, you know. Give me the parks department. I got passed around like 3 times. And, you know, it finally just dawned on me, what are you doing? You're just wanting to punish somebody because they dared say something to your wife. Which, they weren't lying. They said, you know, we will fine you for being in the park. Well, anyway, I don't want to tell that whole story, but how would you want to be treated? If I was the one receiving my call, how would I want to be treated? Probably not the way. I'll say right now, I did not use any cuss words, okay? No, but, you know, I told them what I thought about it in a bad attitude. So that may, whatever I said could have been true and right, but the attitude. That's where the problem was the attitude, you know. So what are we saying here? It says, how you want men to treat you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. It doesn't say how you want brethren to treat you. It says men. So what? What do we say? Not just our neighbor we're to love? No. Jesus starts really stacking it on now, you know. Love your neighbor. Luke chapter 6, verse 26, we would turn there. Luke 6, 26. He says there in Luke 6, 26, "Woe to you when all men speak well of you, so do their fathers to the false prophets. But I say to you who hear," those who hear, I think that's certainly applies here, "love your enemies, do good to those who hate you." Hey, it's easy to love all of us here. That's easy. But then Jesus is stacking more on that. And we are to love one another. But I say to you, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. To those who hate you, to do good. Well, brethren, do you love your enemies? Sometimes what looks like an enemy may actually be a helper. You know, sometimes you need to be told a few things, don't you? I've heard it said, to love your enemies, they tell you your faults. Yes, they do. They tell us our faults, don't they? Now, you know, they say, you stink and you're ugly. It's probably true, but maybe the fact is you do stink. Maybe you need a bath. Maybe you need to comb your hair. You know, it may be the truth, but are you going to hate your enemy for that? You know, that statement sounds something like more like your sister would tell you, you know, you stink and you're ugly, and but sometimes your enemies tell you the truth. And so that stirs up a vengeance and a hate within us. My purpose today is simply to love your enemies, and you could add, and show mercy. Matthew 5, chapter 43. Matthew 5. Verse 43, "You have heard that it is said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy." That's not in the Bible. That's just a common saying that may have been being said at that time. But verse 44, "But I say to you, love your enemies, bless them who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you." Words, treat them in love and action as you would for someone that you would naturally love. You know, because here in your own family, you would love your mate, you'd love your children. Children love their brothers and sisters, but I mean, they go at it, you know. And you disagree with them, but you don't hate them, going to that point. But it says instead, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those that spitefully use you. Yes. As we as read, or we have talked about, I believe Matthew 19, 18, "Whatsoever you would that men do to you, you do so to them." That sometimes is hard to keep in mind when you're dealing with people that you basically don't agree with. The political state of the nation now is so divided, and it's going as far as hate, even wishing someone's dead. I want to read something from Barnes' notes about loving your neighbor and about love. He says, "Two kinds of love spring from the same fountain, goodwill to all men, all mankind. Can we have goodwill toward all mankind, even though here with the knowledge that's been revealed to us, say these people here, they're desperately wicked and just unable to be loved. So one, as Barnes says, one feeling by which we approve of the conduct of another. It's easy to love someone whose conduct agrees with us. Oh yeah, I like that person. I love that person. I mean, yeah, how many love John Wayne because he did things that need to be done. But he wasn't really loving his neighbor, probably. Well, he could have been in some ways, but another second point they brought out, we wish well to a person, though we cannot approve of his conduct. We can still wish well for people without approving their conduct. We don't have to approve their conduct. You know, it says to associate with the humble. Let's look at Romans chapter 12. So how are we supposed to repay people that actually abuse or spitefully use us? Romans 12, verse 16. Let's see, I need to turn back a page. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. I mean, you have your opinion, but you don't have to be the wise guy in causing offense with it. And in verse 17, repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of men. And in verse 18, if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. In verse 19, beloved, do not avenge yourself, but rather give place to wrath, or put it down, set it aside, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay. Vengeance is mine. You know, we've already read that we are to love our enemies. And when we get into a vengeful attitude, we're really getting off in the wrong way. Because God says, I was trying to think where that scripture is, vengeance is mine. I didn't actually write it down. But when it comes to vengeance, that's up to God. We don't have the knowledge, the spirit, and the attitude to apply vengeance. So my first point is no revenge. You could say no revenge but mercy, but no revenge. In Leviticus 19:18, I would like to turn there because some have the notion that, we had that mean God in the Old Testament, and now we have the Son. He's a nice guy. But here in Leviticus 19, verse 18, you shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the eternal. And we know, as we have read, Jesus expanded that to not just a neighbor, but to an enemy. You shall not take vengeance. I'd love to take vengeance. Does anything feel so good as to get somebody back? Well, that's wrong, of course. We know in Luke, maybe I did not read Luke 6, did I? Luke 6, verse 27. I know I did. I probably just talked about it. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. Yes, we read that. Bless those who curse you and pray for those who despitefully use for you. In other words, he's saying, be merciful in your demands. Sometimes you actually have power over someone in situations, and you could be vengeful. But he's saying is be merciful in your demands. Your own children, you know, be merciful in your demands. Don't condemn. Don't repay evil for evil. You know, you did this, I'm going to do that. And it just keeps escalating, doesn't it? Man, yeah, it just keeps growing. You know, husband and wives get into this habit. Well, you did this. Well, yeah, then you did that. And it just keeps escalating, and it goes nowhere. Don't repay evil for evil. Love is toward everyone. You know, well, we're not a doormat. A doormat is not respected. It's just abused. Let's see what Matthew chapter 5, you already know, but it's nice to be refreshed. God has us do things. You say, well, I've already done that. We were here last week on the Sabbath. Why do we have to come again? Matthew 5, verse 43. Because as physical human beings, we have to keep being renewed and reminded. Pretty soon we're just slipping, and pretty soon we don't even know why we were doing what we had been doing. Matthew 5, verse 43. You have heard it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, as we've talked about. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, and do good to them. Well, love is toward everyone. We read the scripture, but the point is, love is toward everyone. We're not respected if we're just a pushover, and we don't stand up for what is right, but we can't do it with vengeance. In verse 45, that you may be sons. Verse 44, but I say you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you. Verse 45, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. That's how God deals with people, and he knows when to intervene. Yes, he knows when. Not returning evil for evil at all. And I did write down that scripture. Vengeance is mine, Deuteronomy 32, 35. We don't need to turn there. But he says, I will repay in due time, their foot will slip. In due time, their foot will slip. Maybe he doesn't have to do anything. Probably not, but just going that way, the foot's going to slip. I was talking to my wife. I said, you know, if God takes his blessing away, that's all he needs to do. He doesn't have to curse, because if he takes his blessing away, I'm done for. I mean, physically, mentally, financially. You know, if he takes his blessings, which we don't want to do that at all. Let's look at 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. In verse 8. Oh, I I'm in James. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. Well, I will read verse 7, just a reminder of all you guys. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, or the special vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Yes, that not honoring your wife and vice versa to the husband, your prayers are hindered. And in verse 8, finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tender-hearted, be courteous. Just being courteous. You know, when I make the phone call, I can be courteous and maybe say the same words. It's how you do it. You can be courteous, and something needs to be brought out. Hey, that's right and good. But we can be courteous, and we can show a person love, and we can have compassion. And in verse 9 and 10, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling. This is what happens in marriages at times. They get into a match of returning evil for evil, reviling for reviling. That does not work. It's not a good idea. But on the contrary, blessings. Know that you are called to this and that you may inherit a blessing. You want to inherit a blessing? Gives us a formula there. Having compassion, loving our brothers, being tender-hearted, not returning evil for evil. Not returning that. As God said, because, yeah, we love to be, I say we, I'm talking about me, I'm kind of assuming you're probably similar to me. We love to return evil for evil, and we love vengeance, don't we? What about Moses? I'm going to turn there, but you know, when he was challenged by Korah, Aaron, and his sister Miriam, he let God sort it out. And other times, he pleaded for Israel to God. You know, he knew if God took his blessings from Israel, they were doomed. And he pleaded for them. And there's an article, we don't have time to go in that, in United News, I think it's 629, the Beatitudes, attitudes to be, there in Matthew 5 on through, that for a carnal mind and a mind that has gotten God's Spirit, but we're still human, that's a hard one. And this could go on in the church where people are at odds with one another and, you know, begin to, oh, yeah, we got to smile. Yeah, we're real smile. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we could be dropping little hints about someone. That's more powerful than just coming out and saying it. Just start sowing some heeds or some seeds, you know, for your competition, whether it be for recognition or praise, whatever it be, we all want that. You know, insinuations are more powerful than words, it seems, most of the time. So loving your neighbor and loving your enemies can be right here within us. I know some people just irritate us and make us feel like hating them right here. You know, that's just, that person's just irritating. And that person just really rubs me the wrong way. It's really hard to really put it down. Just what is it? But it's just causing us to treat, we could be treating ourselves right here in this church like enemies. Well, if we are, what are we supposed to do with our enemies? We're supposed to love them and bless them and pray for them. You remember in Luke 6, it says to bless those who curse you and pray for those who spitefully use you. Well, since my association in church since 1967, oh, we've just seen these attitudes over and over. And because we're people, we're carnal by nature inside, and we still are growing and we're still choosing. So when we're mistreated, we got to always remember, hey, the person here that we consider an enemy is a child of God, to be respected as so, to be respected and acknowledged, and not take it upon ourselves to do what? Not to take vengeance. So what should we do? What do we do? My point is that we choose mercy. We choose mercy, because I think each one of us would want to have mercy. If our mind is open, we realize that we need mercy. What does it say in Proverbs 25:21? Remember that? Well, let's look and see. Psalms, Proverbs 25. Verse 21. It says, if your enemy is hungry, what do? Give him bread to eat. If he's thirsty, give him water to drink. These are needs. And you see somebody that has, these are real needs, and he's your enemy, you go ahead and help him, don't you? When you go ahead and help him. So it says, for so you will heap coals of fire on his head. Well, the thing is, we need to keep in mind that every person potentially will be a son of God, has that potential the same as we do. Yes. Fill his needs. I don't think that means give him a steak dinner or a cold pop or a cold beer. No, give him some food and give him some water. Take care of his needs. What does it say in Matthew 23? We're talking about choosing mercy here. Matthew 23. In verse 23. Yeah, we want to... Mercy is something that has to be developed and we have to grow into it. I don't see it just, hey, I was baptized yesterday and now I'm a merciful person. No, it's a growing process, isn't it? Matthew 23, verse 23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have neglected what? The weightier matters of the law, which are justice, mercy, and faithfulness. And he says, these you ought to have done. You should tithe without leaving the others undone. Even back in Micah 6:8, I won't turn there, but it says again, do justly and love mercy. Does it really make you really feel good to have mercy? Doesn't? I think it does. Benson Commentary says, it says, they observed the ceremonial precepts of the law with all possible exactness. Oh, yeah, they get down to every detail. Possible exactness. While they utterly neglected the eternal, immutable, indispensable rules of righteousness. Well, if the person that's living ungodly likes to demonstrate how great they are by going into all these little things, look what I do, you know, this here and that, that I won't do on the Sabbath and I will do, you know. But they neglect the eternal, immutable, indispensable rules of righteousness. What does it say in James 2:13? I will turn there and read that. James 2 in verse 13. It's for judgment without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Let's look at verse 12 first. So speak and do, and so do as those who will be judged by the law. For judgment, in verse 13, is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. I don't think any of us want to be caught in that situation of not showing mercy. Because we're going to need mercy sometime. Even though we've been called, we've been obeying God for 50 years. But we're going to need mercy at times. And then it says, mercy triumphs over judgment. Mercy triumphs over judgment. So we know what happens to the one who has shown no mercy. Yeah, people cover sin by showing great concern over small things, but the big things they passing over, saying to choose mercy. The Pharisees made major issues over Jesus over and over, didn't they? They made major issues because he did good on the Sabbath. Oh, you're doing this on the Sabbath. But he was doing good while ignoring the reason for the Sabbath. Ignoring the reason. It was made for mankind. It was made to refresh man physically, spiritually, and mentally. And what they were doing, they was turning it instead, made the Sabbath an additional burden. In other words, it was given to give mankind relief from the rigors of this world. If you're out in this world, which you are, you need relief. You need a break. Because the rigors are out there for all men. But for us, sometimes even more. Because we have to deal with the situations that the world accepts as good and we cannot accept. See, the Pharisees pretend to be exceedingly careful with obedience to the smallest things. That's just an old trick of deception, showing how righteous you are in these small things, while indulging themselves secretly in uncontained immorality. From Barnes' notes, it says, let's look at verse 14. Somehow I got off the page. Anyway, no, Matthew 23, that's where I want to be. In verse 14, what's it say there? We read past that, but what does it say there in verse 14? Matthew 23. Verse 14. Maybe give an explanation there. 13:23-14. That's not the scripture I wanted. I can't understand what has happened to it. Oh, maybe on the wrong page. Hey, it happens. Let's see. No, that's not it. Anyway, it's talking about the small things, and they pass over the good things like justice, mercy, and this kind of help. 23:14, I thought it was. Well, I'm not in 23. That helps. Matthew 23:14. Hey, it's just a simple mistake. No problem. I mean, I'm just misleading 50 people. 23:14. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you, you know, he's talking about them passing over good things and making big issues out of the small. Verse 14, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers, though for you will receive greater condemnation. Oh, yeah, this guy's a real prayer. I mean, he can pray for 10 minutes in public. So Barnes' notes says something about verse 14. It means they devour widows' houses. The houses is their property or possessions of any kind. They seduced widows and poor people to commit the management of their property to them as guardians. Hey, we'll take care of you. You're a widow. You don't really know how to manage this. We will take care of your property. And then took advantage of them and defrauded them. It was in pretense of devoting their property to a religious purpose. Well, your property, we can give it to the temple or whatever. And they were defrauding widows and maybe people that didn't understand law to take advantage of them. Elcott's commentary says, by leading devout women under the show of piety to bestow on them their estate or houses. In other words, enticing devout women to give them control of their property. See, they were passing over justice, mercy, and faith while they were pretending through their long prayers and tithing over, mint and aromas. Well, yeah, they mint and those things that smell good, but how do you tithe on them? I don't know. So they were basically substitution of the lower for the higher, substituting something small and just totally overlooking the obvious. The word mint, it says, means literally sweet smelling, like a fragrance. So they were tithing over that, over fragrance, while they were defrauding widows' houses. And I think I've already read that. What about the Good Samaritan? He stopped his day. Busy day, he's traveling, right, to help a stranger. And he asked the question, Jesus, well, who is my neighbor? And Jesus said, who was neighbor to him who fell among thieves. Which here's a Samaritan going, who were basically despised by the Jews. And here's a man that's been mugged and robbed, and we know by the story, a Levite passed by, a priest passed by. Well, they didn't want to be unclean. They had duties at the temple. See? Instead of, they were passing over proper judgment. And yeah, it was important for the priest to be to be clean. But which was more important? Jesus said, Jesus asked, who was the neighbor to him who fell among thieves? In verse 37, I wasn't going to turn there, it's Luke 10. Him who showed mercy. That's who his neighbor was. Him who showed mercy to someone he didn't even know. He didn't know him. He didn't know if he was good, bad, or what. But he showed mercy. Let's look at an example showing mercy to our enemies. You've read 2 Kings chapter 6. Let us turn there. 2 Kings chapter 6. These are the Syrians who were making raids into Israel. They were just raiding in and taking what they want. Even back in the book of Judges shows that, I can't call a name, he was in hiding, grinding wheat because they would come and just take what he had. So they were just raiders, thieves. They would come in and take things. And let's look at 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 8. Now the king of Syria was making war against Israel, and he consulted with his servants, saying, my camp will be in such a place. And the man of God, he would tell the king of Israel where that would be. And he'd say, avoid that because Syria is going to be there. And, you know, they're going to take you and steal from you and whatever. And so the king of Israel would avoid that. And so then it was told the king of Assyria. Let's look at verse 11. 2 Kings 6, verse 11. Therefore, the heart of the king of Assyria was greatly troubled. How's this happening? Every time we make a move, the king of Israel knows what we're doing by this thing. And he called his servants and said to him, will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel? In other words, there's a spy among us. And the response was, in verse 12, one of his servants said, none, my lord, O king, but Elisha the prophet who is in Israel tells the king of Israel the very words that you speak. So this just background to show then Syria sends an army to get Elisha. Not to conquer Israel, but to go after Elisha. And so that's what he did. And so the king of Syria said first, well, show me where he is and I'll send somebody to get him. And they said, he's in Dothan. And verse 14, therefore he sent horses and chariots and great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city. And when the servant of the man of God, verse 15, who the man of God would be Elisha, of God rose early and went out, and there was an army surrounding the city with horses, chariots, and his servant said, alas, my master, what shall we do? And Elisha said in verse 16, don't fear, For those who are with us are more than those who are with him. The servant looked out. All he could see was the Syrian army. And then Elisha prayed and said, "Eternal, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around. God's army was there, but the servant could not see it. So I think that ties in to what happened to the Syrians. In verse 18, "So when the Syrians came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Eternal and said, 'Strike this people, I pray, with blindness.' And he struck them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. Then Elisha said to them, 'Hey, this is not the way. Come and follow me, and I'll bring you to the man whom you seek.' But he led them to Samaria, which was the capital of Israel." Yes, he took them. Were they blind? How'd they follow him? And there was word in Syria back, we won't go there, but in chapter 6, there's the account of Naaman, who came to be healed in Israel. And afterwards, then he loaded up some dirt on an animal to take it back, because he said, "From now on, I'll only sacrifice to the Eternal." And, you know, to make an altar, it had to be dirt if you weren't supposed to use hewn stones. So, I mean, there was an example in Syria before, and that's usually the way it is. There is an example and a warning. So Syria's coming after Elisha. Elisha's servant could see the army, but he could not see God's army because he was spiritually blind. God's army was there, and then God opened his eyes, and then he could see. We know from Hebrews 13:21 that some have met angels and didn't even recognize it because spirit blindness. And so in verse 18 of 2 Kings 6, verse 18, the Syrians were struck with blindness. And were they blind? I mean, they were totally blacked out. I was reading from Barnes' notes. It said, "Not real blindness or lack of sight, but a state of illusion, which man see things otherwise than what they really are." They could see, but they just couldn't figure out things, you know. Jamie Foston Brown mentions mental hallucinations, not total blindness. Or how could they have followed him? Does it remind you back in Genesis 19:11 in Sodom, when all the city came and the angels struck them with blindness, but they were still wondering? They wearied themselves trying to find the door. If it was pitch black to them, no, they were blinded spiritually. God can do that. I was thinking it was maybe like people who have Bibles. There's Bibles all over this nation and the West, but cannot have the proper understanding of it. They have it, they can read it, but it's not there until God opens their mind to the truth. Well, these people were blinded. You know, people have Bibles, but they're unable to see the truth. So these people were blinded in the sense that they just could not get it all together as far as their sight. UCG commentary says, "A powerful example of God's supernatural help, and God does not change." In which God still intervenes in each one of our lives. It's obvious because maybe you read the Bible for years, and then all at once you could understand it. You seen the words, but you didn't see the truth. Of course, they just quote Malachi 3:6, I am the eternal, I do not change. Therefore, you're not consumed with judgment, or the judgment would consume us. God has mercy. If he did not have mercy, we'd be consumed. Judgment would consume us. Even though we know God's truth, we still, if we got received the judgment we deserve, we'd be consumed. So God strikes Assyrian with some kind of temporary blindness. Might say, like the world has now. It's right before them, but they can't see it. Elisha's servant, there was a whole army of chariots out there he could not see until God gave him the power to see. And in 2 Kings 6, verse 21, it's just saying, you don't kill prisoners of war. Let's see what it says there in verse 21. Now when the king of Israel saw them, he said to Elisha, my father, shall I kill them? But he answered, you shall not kill them. Would you kill those whom you have taken captive with your sword and your bow? He said, set food and water before them that they may eat and drink and go to their master. That was Israel's enemy. And when God intervened, they were basically helpless. And God said, set food before them. You don't kill your prisoner of war. So they prepared a great feast for them in verse 23. And then it says, so the hordes of the Syrians raiders came no more into the land of Israel. These band of Syrians, where they just come in stealing and looting Israel. And this particular army, keep in mind, it was sent after Elisha. It wasn't sent to conquer the nation of Israel. Showing mercy to our enemies. Give them food and drink as they need, if he's hungry. It's showing mercy to our enemy, who is at our mercy. In other words, we have power over people, and we could punish, or we could choose to show mercy. In other words, if we have power over them, we would choose to have mercy. You know, sometimes a mate or a co-worker, they may actually feel threatened by the truth. I've actually, a woman told me that she felt like her husband had a mistress, and it was the church. He cared more about the church than her, so she was feeling threatened. Well, showing kindness and mercy sometimes will resolve things like that. We know we're not to repay evil with evil. In Romans 12, verse 17, you can read that, but I'll read through that. Repay no evil for evil. Live peaceably as much as depends on you. As much as depends on you, live peaceably. Don't avenge. In verse 19, it says, don't avenge. That was my point. Earlier point was, don't use vengeance. In verse 20, it says, show mercy. We know in Proverbs 16, in verse 7, I would like to just read that quickly. Proverbs 16, verse 7. What does it say? You've read that. 16, verse 7. In Proverbs. Says, when a man's ways please the eternal, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. That is, if we follow God's direction in dealing with enemies, not being vengeful, but being merciful, helping them if they have legitimate needs. So, brethren, I just ask you to remember the weightier matters of the law. There's justice, mercy, and faithfulness. Remember also that our enemies are made in the very image of God. There's people out there that, managers, employers, bosses can treat people with contempt because they have the power over them. But they are made in the image of God and have the potential to be the sons of God. God is merciful to us if we're merciful. I think I wanted to go back to Luke chapter 6 and read one more time. Luke chapter 6. Couldn't remember if I had read this. Luke chapter 6, I'd read part of it. Luke chapter 6 and verse 35. It says, "But love your enemies, do good and lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great." It may not be immediately. Good chances it's not. "And you will be sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the unthankful and the evil." Therefore, verse 36, "Therefore be merciful, just as your Father is also merciful." So, brethren, we love our neighbor, or we're supposed to. So, brethren, I just close by saying, love your enemies and show mercy.